Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
Hello, and welcome back to a Thursday evening edition of The Full Ride on the Chase Thomas podcast, presented by Blue Wire. I am the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. I'm amped, man. I'm excited for this show we got tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be good. We're going to be doing our favorite chicken sandwiches. I want to have some lists. I want to have some arbitrary, let's rank these things during the offseason. I want to get your perspective on food and movies and things like that. So we're gonna mix things up along with the college football news minutia and then one big theme, college football theme per episode. But I'm very excited to break down the top 20 quarterbacks of the last 20 years because I think this will be a fun list. And when I was going through it, I didn't realize just how many great quarterbacks there really were. So we're going to be leaving out some really good ones.
It's tough, and you can't just go with Heisman winners either. There's like I had to like just kind of go year by year. I'm like, am I forgetting anybody? Like it was it was fun. Go a little stroll down memory lane.
Absolutely. Don't forget, folks, you can support The Full Ride by going to chasethomaspodcast.com today and checking out all of our previous episodes. You can find that by just going through the site and supporting us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/chasethomaswriter, like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter. And if you like listening to Matt and I once a week during the college football offseason, you can leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. It's quick and easy and really helps the show continue to grow. Matt, what have you been reading? What have you been watching since we last talked?
Oh, you know, man, just I'm all over the place. Just taking it all in, basically.
Mm. How's the puppy?
He's a little fucker, man. But that's his new nickname, ALF, Alf. He's just a little fucker. But he's good, you know, getting that whole potty training stuff going, so he's getting better.
Interesting. Okay, so
but yeah,
he is messing up your house a lot.
I mean, he's really not. Unfortunately, he seems to, whenever he poops, the majority of the time he pees, you know, it can be all over the place. Majority of the time he poops, it's actually on these little pee pad things we got, so it's okay. Like, he's learning, you know, he's like, I gotta go. I need to go towards the door, but I don't know, he just can't hold it to get all the way out, but we're getting there. We're making some progress.
Well, that's good. How was
I actually stopped him mid squat the other day, and I was like, no. And I picked him up, and he like held it all the way to get outside. It was pretty solid.
I think you're ready for a real fatherhood. I think.
I think so, man. No, I think this has shown me how not ready I am. It's like, this is like such a handful, but at the end of the day, it's like I can lock him in a kennel if I need to for a couple hours and go run some errands. You can't really do that with a child.
No.
It's frowned upon, at least.
Crime. I think that's what they call a crime in this country. Let's start off, Matt Green, with our favorite chicken sandwiches. Like, there's a lot of talk right now. Zaxby's, getting in late. I kind of like the marketing here. Getting in late. I am a chicken sandwich connoisseur. I'm a chicken tender connoisseur. Love chicken tenders. Could eat them every day. Love some chicken tendies, as the kids say. Do you have a list, Matt? I know you're not the biggest fast food guy, but
I was trying to put together a list. I feel like there's not that many chicken sandwiches I even eat. Like, okay, I feel like I don't even have like a top five. I'll be honest though. I usually go Nugs when I go Chick-fil-A. So, but okay. I have Chick-fil-A as my number two on the chicken sandwich list. I go with the Wendy's spicy chicken. That's my number one.
It's underrated.
Man. It is very underrated. But that's pretty much my list. Like I feel like I'm the only person in the world that never tried the Popeyes thing. Like everything was such a craze. There's the crazy lines. Like it was such a crazy time to be alive, really. That month there that just people were killing each other for Popeyes chicken sandwiches. It was just wild. And I feel like I didn't want to be like the person that just bought into the hype and just went. And so I feel like I still haven't tried it, but I see the commercials and me and Tori say to each other, like, we should try that. Like we still haven't tried it. Everyone made such a big deal about it. So I got to get around to it, but you're the connoisseur, man. What are your thoughts?
So I have a 1A and 1B, and this might be a cop out, but it really just depends on where I am in the day. So the chicken sandwich at Chick-fil-A, it's easy, it's quick, it's great. I prefer them cold, like a monster. I love a good Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich that's been sitting out for a couple hours. Love them.
So like, no, that's room temperature. You want room temperature? Oh my god, that's terrible. I will say the Bojangles, I go with like the biscuit. I never go there for lunch or dinner though. I like only consider Bojangles for breakfast. I'm not really sure why.
Well, I've like never really been a Bojangles person. I've never really gone. It was never on my radar.
That Cajun filet biscuit and the Bo Rounds, man. That's quality stuff.
I believe you. I believe you. Nothing against Bojangles. If you want to be a presenting sponsor, Bojangles, it's fine. You're down to my girlfriend's house in North Knox.
I respect their college branding they got going on with that box. Yeah, it's some kind of box they have for like, you know, UGA tailgates. I'm sure they do it every local like Southeastern school. But yeah, and it's like Georgia'd out. It's like red and black. It's like it's pretty sick. A buddy of mine, big South Carolina fan, said like the busiest Bojangles like in the country is
interesting.
Right outside of South Carolina Stadium. Like there's like on a train tracks and
Columbia, South Carolina.
It just gets I guess it just gets all kinds of business for football games and everything.
Well, aren't they based out of North Carolina?
I was thinking they were like South Carolina or something. I'm not sure about that.
Bojangles did not make my list. But back to Chick-fil-A. So I like Chick-fil-A's efficiency where like I can eat the chicken sandwich while I'm driving somewhere else. However, this is a big point for me. The Zaxby's Kickin' Chicken Sandwich Meal is king. It tastes the best. Like that Kickin' Chicken Sandwich Meal is so dang good. However.
So is that like a breast on there? Or are they the one that has like the tenders on it?
Oh, no, that's the tendies.
Okay, yeah. See, I've never had that sandwich, to be honest. I'm the kind of person who just like go to a restaurant, I find the thing I want, and I just get that every single time. It's like,
I just
get the tenders and the what is it? The chicken finger plate? That's my jam. Go with it every time.
Not gonna go against you on that. You can't go wrong there. However, the problem with this, Matt, is that it is the messiest messiest meal you can get of the big group of the chicken.
I could see that. The tenders, that's tough to hold up on the sandwich.
Well, it's also a lot of sauce. They put a lot of sauce on there. And the sauce, like, I think there's ranch on it, and some Zach sauce and stuff, but like, it is jam-packed with flavor, Matt.
Jam-packed with flavor.
So it always hits me. It's the most delicious sandwich. Chick-fil-A, it's not like, I don't know if it's part of, like, part of the Chick-fil-A issue is that I've had it so many times that it's just not registering to me what it tastes like. I just have this, it's just like fuel to me. If I'm eating Chick-fil-A, it's fuel. It's never like, glad
that's true. It's voter fatigue on, yes. On Chick-fil-A.
Popeyes, I just didn't really like it. I'm not a pickle person. I'm not like I'm not a messy person. I'm driving around. Like, it's just like you said, it's not worth it. And also they have so many other great options. Like Popeyes has a lot of other great stuff that I very much enjoy. I think the shrimp box was really good. The chicken and shrimp box, I seem to recall from a couple years ago, was really good. I also just like their spicy tendies. Those are great. But no, I have one, I guess, Zaxby's. Like, if I have all the time in the world, if I'm posted up at my house watching Killing Eve and I get one choice of a chicken sandwich, I'm getting the kicking chicken sandwich meal from.
Which I think if you're making the rankings, I don't think convenience should matter. I think it's just at the end of the day,
convenience
pound for pound, best sandwich.
It's part of the eating process. You have to factor it in.
I mean, it's true, but I feel like you said, with all the time in the world, like, if you're ranking Zaxby's number one, then I think it is the legit number one.
Okay. There we go.
But so if you go to like a restaurant, like, mm-hmm. do you ever get like a chicken sandwich at like just like a sit down restaurant or anything? I don't feel like I ever really do. So you're just strictly fast food chicken sandwich guy?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about it. I don't think I've ever ordered a chicken sandwich at a sit down restaurant. I've gotten hamburgers.
Yeah. And I'll go like a buffalo chicken wrap or something like that at a restaurant. But yeah, I don't think there's many that I don't see chicken sandwich on a menu, and it's not where my mind goes.
No, and if I'm watching a game at a sports bar, like, I'm getting chicken tenders or like boneless wings. I'm not getting a sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree with that. I go traditional wings though. You're a boneless guy.
It's more about the mess. Back to the mess. I love getting the fork action and dipping it in sauces. Like, if you're like, it again, depends on the situation. On a date, never go traditional wings ever. That's gonna be a mess. Like, unless you've been dating this person for a while and you're good, Matt. Because I will say, I was out on a date once with somebody years ago back in Atlanta because a onion dripped out of the side of her mouth while she was eating this really messy burger when we were in Atlantic Station after a Hawks game, and I just couldn't unsee it.
Are you serious? That sounds like some Jerry Seinfeld type stuff.
Never talked to her ever again. I'm not even kidding. Like, I was just like, I was so disgusted by the entire thing, because when she ordered it, like, I raised an eyebrow of just like, this is date number two. This is an insane choice for you to get the messiest burger.
Hey, she was feeling comfortable with you, man. She was opening up. She was putting her guard down.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
And
I gotta stay up.
At least that early, date number two. That's
just
fair.
Way too comfortable. I remember just being so disgusted. Like, I wanted to walk out there, and I couldn't unsee it. Like, I remember her going for a kiss, and I just, like, sidestepped it. And when it got the hug, I was like, no.
That's hilarious, because I just assumed the story was going to be, like, you were eating some wings, and you got all messy, and then, like, you never heard from her back from the girl. Like, it totally went south. But you changed that up on me. You were the one that was turned off. That was funny.
I'm not a messy eater, and I'm very particular about what I eat in public. Like, I don't enjoy eating around other people in general. It's not one of my favorite things. I don't like watching people eat. I don't like having to think about how I'm eating in front of them. Don't enjoy it.
I mean, I would prefer not to be the only person eating, but if, like, everyone's eating and I'm just eating, I'm not. I don't care. I don't care how I'm eating. I don't know. That's just me.
Just look at other people. Like, Thanksgiving's a train wreck. Just to see.
So you're judging everyone. So you just assume everyone's judging you. That's what it is.
Yes, I think that's some sort of neurotic behavior. But that I mean, I'm just being honest, Matt. That is how my brain works.
That's fair.
We're also going to talk on this week's episode of the full ride on the Chase Thomas podcast that you can check out on chasethomaspodcast.com. This week in college football news, Matt Green. And there's a couple things. Drew Aller committed to Penn State quarterback. He is the highest rated quarterback in the James Franklin era, and I think predates him by a little bit. He is pretty highly touted, and I don't know if you watch Penn State the last couple of years. They have not had a good quarterback since Trace McSorley dipped out. So Sean Clifford had a really bad year last year. Looks like he's going to have to be under center this year under a new OC in Yurchich. I still don't know how to pronounce this dude's last name. Coming over from Texas, an Ohio guy, and I think he got his start, I want to say, in Gundy's staff at Oklahoma State. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. But what do you make of Drew Aller committing to Penn State?
Yeah, it's the most important position. You gotta get big time quarterbacks. I would imagine this is the highest ranked quarterback they've gotten since Hackenberg, right? Which that didn't exactly work out. So
no,
I mean, I guess he was fine at Penn State, but obviously nothing ever came of the five-star status that he was supposed to be. But yeah, I mean, big time commit for them. We'll see what comes of it.
The big story, though, out of college football this past week is the absolute mess at Kansas. First, it was Les Miles. We talked about that briefly on the podcast last week. But now, not only is Les Miles out, Jeff Long, the AD who hired him, longtime friend of Les Miles, he's also gone. Just an absolute mess. This was the right thing. Jeff Long, his explanation for not knowing about the skeletons in Les Miles' closet was insane, of just like, well, I asked him about it and he said he didn't have it. It's like, oh, background check completed. Like, in what other walk of life is that how background checks work? But college football is just a different breed of incompetence sometimes. And Jeff Long sucks. This all sucks. He's a terrible AD. Like, the Petrino stuff dating back to Arkansas, how he hired Brett Bielema. Like, Jeff Long is, I kind of want to just see somebody write an oral history of Jeff Long as the worst AD in college football, like, the last 30 years. So it's good news for Kansas. I know, with all the mess with the basketball team right now and the sanctions that they're going to get, and also just the mess of just Kansas football in general perpetually. And if you go down the history of just all past Jayhawk coaches of like the last 20 years, it's so depressing, from Turner Gill to Mark Mangino to Les Miles to the suing of David Beatty and the back and forth there over pennies. Like, it's,
and Mangino was the one when they were actually good for a couple years, right? That's,
yes.
So he, with what was the quarterback? Reesing. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah. Kansas, it was a weird hire to begin with, honestly. Like, I feel like it had name value. But when you first heard that Les Miles got the Kansas job, you were like, what the hell is Les Miles going to do to Kansas? Like, he's not young. Like, it's just, it was a very weird move. It was like the Mack Brown to North Carolina thing. It's like, he had like a history with North Carolina, and it seemed like there was like a plan that he's going to set it up for the future, and then someone's going to kind of run with it after him. Like, just in general, just Les Miles going to Kansas, I thought from a coaching perspective, it had the chance to like ruin his legacy. Mm-hmm. And now, obviously, this is...
Oh, his legacy is destroyed.
This is, yeah, just it's a whole nother level. Now, well, it's...
He also, with all this, like, he was the shoe-in to replace Corso, right? Like, he was the natural guy with his personality, the dude eating turf and stuff, that, like, he was the crazy uncle who was...
I don't know if he was there in line to replace Corso or anything, but he definitely would have had a job on TV if he wanted it, for sure.
This could be a theme, by the way. Let's hold that. Let's jot that down. Jot that down, Matt. The most obvious, or not even most obvious, just who is best suited to replace Corso when that time comes?
All right,
you know who's not Matt Green?
Who's that?
A newly reacquainted Athens resident. Can you guess who I'm talking about here?
You're talking about Mark Richt.
Yeah, Mark Richt.
CMR.
He does not belong. No.
I will actually... Mark Richt wouldn't be that terrible of a person. I feel like when he was on ACC Network, he started being kind of crazy. Like, really showing like his personality and eating all the cheese puffs and everything. Like, he was like a goofball on there. So he kind of had more personality than I would have given him credit for, like, considering what his press conferences always were over the years. It was just, oh, this team, you know, they got a nice special teams unit there. It was just, you know, we're going to have to, you know, prepare for those guys. It was always the most boring, monotone press conferences ever.
I'm trying to think who makes the most sense.
I guess, see, someone like a Mike Houston Leach, but he's like too crazy.
Yeah. I was thinking Houston Nutt.
Yeah, Houston Nutt. I don't know. That's not a bad one, because Corso wasn't even a good coach, really. So you don't necessarily have to be a good coach. I feel like it's got to have just be someone with some craziness. Someone who's not afraid to shoot a gun inside the Cotton Bowl.
No, you know what they also need to bring back in Every Day Should Be Saturday founder, Spencer Hall, now of Moon Crew, had a whole thread about bringing back the best college football show of all time, College Football Live, or Scoreboard. What was it? I don't even remember what it was.
Oh, no, you're talking about Lou Holtz and Mark May? Dude, no. I feel like they got enough time.
Those clips. The comments on this thread, I'll send it to you after, is amazing. It's like, I've never seen a show just have an entire show just all wrong opinions for 30 minutes or whatever it was. Just everybody was wrong all the time. And it was incredible. Like, I want that show back. It's a terrible show, and I need that back.
Yeah, I can do without that, especially when...
so angry.
Well, and they did that whole, like... At one point, they had, like, the gavel, and it was, like, a courtroom kind of set up. Like, it was like, we're giving Lou Holtz a more long-winded answer than he was already going to give. Like, this is a terrible idea.
No, it's great. Bring it back. Bring it back.
But honestly, this year, College Game Day was better than I feel like it's been in recent years in terms of Lee Corso, because... I feel like they just got just the right amount of Corso in the show. Like, he was in there enough to have fun, but it's like, yeah, he could be in his own setting. Everything's kind of pre
with Herbie, with Desmond Howard, with the guest that week. They had some good guests this year. McConaughey was good. McAfee was good. I'm trying to think who else was on there. Who else made it?
Well, McAfee's kind of a regular, right? I feel like and then Pollock is obviously always on there. But yeah, I think that's an interesting time. Les Miles, I guess, now that you mention it, would have been like kind of a solid candidate for that. I don't know. Maybe look at Will Muschamp.
Will Muschamp's not a bad one either.
He's got some TV charisma. I don't know.
I don't hate that. You know, Butch Jones, if he didn't want to get back at Arkansas State, I think he actually would have made some sense too.
No, Butch Jones is terrible on TV. I feel like that was what cost him his job, was the media like rattling him so much. I guess it's a complete different pressure.
It is. Last thing before we get into our main event subject matter, Matt Green. Rush Probst, old friend Rush Probst. He's been placed on leave. I don't know if you saw this already, but he's been placed on leave by Valdosta. Just dishing under a hot mic with somebody higher up in Valdosta. I don't know who he was specifically talking to, allegedly, in this recording, but just casually dishing on Kirby and Saban and the recruiting efforts. There's so much to this, and I have to be careful with how I word this, but like, I don't know if I believe Rush. Like, it was weirdly specific about his Albany guys and about his people and stuff like that, where I'm like, there's no way Rush is not well informed enough on a lot of these SEC coaches and how they operate. Like, there's just no way, with how much he won at Hoover and what he was doing at Colquitt. Like, there's just no way he's not in the know, at least to some extent. However, I don't think Kirby and Saban are this dumb. Like, that's what I go back to. It's like, no, I don't think it's that obvious, and I don't think it's just sitting out there like that. Do I think Kirby cheats a bunch? Absolutely. Like, Kirby, that's what makes him a great recruiter. But, like, I'm not here to judge. Like, it's just Tennessee was cheating. Like, it's not like I'm taking shots at Georgia. I'm just saying that, like, part of what makes Kirby better than Rick is he's a better cheater. Like, that is just part of Kirby's appeal. Like, you, part of being a great recruiter, outside of being a fertile recruiting ground like Georgia or California or Alabama or Florida and Texas, is that you know how to cheat. Like, that is part of it. Like, you know how to get around certain stuff. And they are, I have a hard time believing that Kirby and Nick Saban have not built this infrastructure around themselves that incubates them in a way that protects them from any kind of major violation, just because of how much money they spend on it and how much goes into it. That, like, if they go down, it's going to be really, really difficult because I feel like they have spent the money and the time to put together the perfect like shield around them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I mean, Rush Probst is trying to take down Bear Bryant, too. Like, he's going all the way back. But I'll be honest, as a Georgia fan, like, I think people just, they're not used to Georgia compete, like, recruiting at this level, kind of being in this national elite conversation. And so the first hint of like, oh, Georgia's cheating, it's like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. We told you guys Georgia was cheating. But then once you heard out he's talking about Alabama too, I feel like I got like less nervous. I was like, oh, well, if they're gonna bring Saban down before they bring Kirby down, so like that's a way, Saban's a way bigger deal.
Also,
so
UCLA is not bringing Saban down. Like, they have no interest in bringing down Alabama. That they have no interest.
Oh, for sure. But that's kind of why I felt better about it. I'm just like, they're probably not going to do that to Alabama. So if he's just, this just kind of hearsay. And then for someone like Nick Chubb to kind of take to Twitter, like,
okay, this
if I needed money, I would have gone to the league.
To say? What is he going to do? Come on Twitter and go, he's right.
Well, but it's also like, have you heard anyone from Alabama say anything about Rush Probst? It's like, there's no reason. It's just like hearsay, some rumor. So there's no reason to even acknowledge it. But
like, even if it was true, you're not going to admit that it's true. So it's like when Georgia fans were like, see, Nick Chubb, stand up guy. He would never. It's like, you don't know Nick Chubb.
I mean, no, you wouldn't. And I hate how that's like the perception. It's like, oh no, Nick Chubb is a class act. He wouldn't do something like that. It's like, so because Todd Gurley took like a couple thousand dollars when he was 21 and broke, like he's not a class act or something. Exactly. Like AJ Green, he sold his jersey to just some random dude. Like AJ Green was the epitome of a class act. Like, I'm not sure he ever said one word on the football field.
Yeah.
But like, I would say someone like Nick Chubb, just his personality, I felt like it was less true once I heard him kind of just unsolicited, just kind of go to Twitter on his own. Because, and if you think about it, it's like, Rush Probst kind of, what do you say? It was like three or four payments of like $50,000 that got Chubb to save for his senior year. It's like, if Chubb would have gone pro and been, and then his stock was not nearly as high after his junior year. So maybe he's a third, fourth round pick. It's like, he's making like $1 million at least, like in that first year. So it doesn't really make sense for him to come back for $150,000. But, you know,
he never got any money from any boosters or from anything like that during his entire time at Georgia. It's like, yeah, if it's true, it wouldn't surprise me. If it's not, it wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, and Nick Chubb is a class act, but it's like, if he had fucking $1,000 handshakes with a bunch of boosters in his 4 years while he was there, that doesn't make him less of a class act. No, it's like he's a broke 20-year-old dude.
I wouldn't blame any of these guys. I never blamed Reggie Bush for taking the money. Like, I never blame any of these kids. Like, they should do it. If you're giving it to me, I'm going to take it. Like, that should be,
I mean, other than the fact that you know it's against the rules, like, and that is against the rules, and they all know it's against the rules. So it's like, they might be like kind of BS arbitrary rules, but
is it gonna get me a car? Is it gonna get, am I doing all this stuff for this university and making them a lot of money without my name on the back? Like, people are tuning in to watch me play on Saturdays. Are people filling the stadium for me? Yeah, go get your money, man. Like,
In general, I feel like this feels a little like there's a little less validity to it than when I first heard the rumor.
Oh, for sure.
Like, it feels like it's kind of,
it's completely, if this is Rush Probst, let's stress, allegedly, if this is him, he's not exactly, like, he's just talking. It's like one of those things at the golf club. Like, I just imagine, it's kind of like when Kevin Mather was talking, he got caught in the hot mic at the Rotary Club. And he had to resign because he was saying the quiet things out loud, where he was like, yeah, we manipulate service time for our top prospects. And that's just a thing in baseball. It's like, we hold these guys down so we have longer team control with them. And they could have been up earlier, but we were like, we'd rather have the control. Like, yeah, it's the quiet stuff. Like, I imagine Rush Probst has these conversations, or any big time high school football coach in the South has these conversations, or know about certain shady figures around these programs that there's no way they don't know some of this. There's just none.
Yeah, if there's one thing that I'm confident that Kirby learned from Nick Saban, it was how to keep your hands clean on these things.
I agree. Let's get into our top 20 quarterbacks of the last 20 years. There have been so many great ones. Part of what we've seen with the offensive evolution is this list is going to change so quickly, and you're going to forget about the great ones from even 5 years ago because 10 more will come through the pipeline, because it's an offense focused league now, and everything is about the quarterback. And if you have a big time quarterback, then you make plays. Like the Trey, even the Trey Lance's, Zach Wilson came out of nowhere and is now going number two in the draft, it seems like. Like there's just so many great options now, and this list is going to change and fluctuate a lot because what I noticed as I was filling out this top 20 list was that, like, man, these quarterbacks stood out so much more during this time because it seemed like so many teams just had the Brock Berlins,
Berlin going way back.
Yeah, like the Matt Flynn's and the John Parker Wilsons and the Aaron Murrays. And
so what are you saying about these guys?
And Masons and the Joe Coxes and the Joe Tereshinskis and like programs like that. Now you cannot survive like that anymore. It's just, it's completely different, and it's a completely different game. And it's just the big time quarterbacks. It seems like so many more programs have elite quarterbacks than they used to.
Yeah, I definitely think there's some truth to that. And it's also, you know, in terms of like the numbers and just kind of what the game has become, just the passing numbers are just so much more ridiculous than they were even like 10, 15 years ago.
Absolutely.
Like a 30 touchdown season, it's like you could win a Heisman. Like, what was Troy Smith? He threw like 30 touchdowns that year. Like, he was like clearly the best player in college football too. Like, wasn't even really a debate that year.
And he did not make either of our lists, I don't think. So let's start.
He did not. Can we go like an honorable mention? Because
no,
I threw a few
honorable mentions all night.
Let me throw a few honorable mentions out there that didn't make my list. All right. Mentions.
Go ahead.
Matt Leinart did not make my list.
No.
Jason White did not make my list.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last three I got Aaron Murray, Pat White, Dak Prescott. None of them made the list.
Dak Prescott's a sneaky one that I thought about after. I'm like, I think he had to be on this list. And I don't. But then you go down the list and you're like, who am I taking out?
Yeah, exactly. I'll be surprised. There's one person that's not on your list that I thought was going to be there. And okay. I thought it was your boy Colt Brennan.
Love Colt Brennan.
I was shocked he wasn't on your list.
Hold on. There's a difference. Colt Brennan's the coolest quarterback of all time. Like, he is the coolest college quarterback of all time. He's not one of the 20 best of the last 20 years.
Okay, that's I feel like what we need to get to. So what was your criteria exactly? Because this was difficult for me because, you know, we always talk about this with the all-time NBA conversation. Mm-hmm. It's like, am I judging someone's career achievements, or am I judging like I'm playing a pickup game and I want that guy right now? You know what I mean? It's like, it's how I kind of compare, like, not getting too into basketball, but like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar versus like Anthony Davis, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like a way better career, but like Anthony Davis is kind of one of the most ridiculously skilled players ever, you know? So it's like, do you just go like today, who do I want to play with? Who's the best player? Or are you judging, you know, the championships and the actual career achievements, and just, or is it just kind of a combination of all of it?
I think the most important thing was like, if I have quarterback X for this, if I could pick quarterback X in a national title game, who am I picking first? Like, I have one game to win it all, and I have to bet on this college, like the peak version of this quarterback in college. Who am I taking? It has to be the peak, the best version we ever saw of this particular quarterback. Who am I taking at their absolute apex, where it's like, that dude was the best I've ever seen. And the most dominant, maybe, and like who I put the most trust in to win me a game if I need to win a game. Like, who, especially too, I think about the roster, where it's like, if the roster wasn't great, could they survive? What could they do with a limited roster? Things like that. So this hurt Alabama quarterbacks for me, and why they didn't shoot up. Of just like, it, part of it wasn't their fault, but
there's also like just not really that many good Alabama quarterbacks. There are a lot of just kind of game managers.
But also just some of the bonkers stats. It has to be part of it and what they did in their career. But ultimately, I started with, like, if I do trust, like, if I could just pick. Like, we're playing backyard baseball or backyard football, and all these guys are sitting there, and I'm like, who do I pick first? Who do I pick second? Who do I pick third? If that person's gone, where do I go? So that's kind of how I looked at it.
All right, fair enough.
20. Who is your number 20, Matt?
My number 20, getting things started. So this was the one I struggled with. Matt Leinart here and this guy, Kellen Moore. I was breaking it down. They're both lefties. I'm like, they're basically the same person. But Kellen
Moore. Matt Leinart win the same way at Boise? I don't think so.
I don't really think so at the end of the day. And I think Kellen Moore he was crazy accurate. Like, his numbers were just insane. Like, obviously, it's probably comparable with those two in terms of, like, the talent they're playing with versus the talent their opponents have, it might kind of wash itself out.
Am I crazy, or is Kellen Moore the all-time win leader in college football?
Ooh, I do not have that stat on me. But I think you might be right.
He just got passed, because I know he was there for a while. He went 6-0. So here's why you're wrong about Kellen Moore. I have him at 12 on my list, Matt.
So okay.
He had a 70% completion rate over a 4-year stretch, 142 touchdowns, 28 interceptions. He was 50-3 as a starter. The Broncos went 6-0 against Power 5 teams during his time. I mean, Kellen Moore was like the most efficient Group of 5 quarterback of all time, outside of another name that we're going to get to. Kellen Moore was insanely underrated. He beat Georgia. Like he's even, that's why Colt Brennan's not there. It's like Kellen Moore was just a different level, and I wonder if he had been come around, or maybe if he had come along a couple years later and he played at Oregon or something, or he even played at USC, like how we view Kellen Moore. But that dude, I think he's even better than you're giving him credit for.
You could be right. It's tough to find this like actual wins. I found something. It's a few years old, so someone could have broken it since. But this has Kellen Moore at 1 at 50-3 as a starter. So,
okay, so there you go.
That's pretty absurd. 50 wins in 4 years. So, all right, let's go to your number 20.
Chase Daniel. And it's not because his name's Chase.
It's exactly why. It's because his name's Chase.
You could have made this argument for Dak. Like, he and Dak were in the same level for me. Where it's like, programs, like when Mizzou was in the Big Ten, they were not getting the same kind of players that Eli Drinkwitz is bringing in at Mizzou now. It's just different. Getting Mizzou to number one for multiple weeks and doing what he did with Jeremy Maclin, and how efficient and how ahead of the curve that offense was, and how dominant Chase Daniel was as an efficient machine for years and years. He's kind of like what you were describing as Kellen Moore. He was not an all-time great, but like Chase Daniel, what he did at Mizzou, I just think we're not giving him enough credit for just how good he was. That was, so when they were number one, that was the second time ever that Mizzou was ever number one in the nation. Like, he completed almost 70% of his passes. He has similar stats to Kellen Moore. Won 2 division titles. I don't know, man. Like, getting Mizzou to number one overall is insane, and I think Chase Daniel has to be in my top 20 of the last 20 years just for getting Mizzou there.
Yeah, Chase Daniel, he definitely kind of helped change the program at Missouri. That's definitely a valid point. In terms of just kind of splitting hairs with him on some of these other guys, like, he threw a lot of picks, 18 interceptions his senior year. It's kind of a lot, but yeah, for a guy, 68% completion percentage for his career. Like, that's super impressive. And yeah, I mean, I would, I think he's had the greatest NFL career of all time. So much props to Chase Daniel.
Making that,
he's like 13 years in the league or something now as a backup. What was he at, like 2 starts in his career? Just getting that money, man.
Your number 19.
All right, my number 19, I'm going Tua Tagovailoa.
Very close here. So let's get into Tua. I have Tua at 17 on my list.
Okay.
19 online is Mac Jones, but
Tua's got
Mac Jones significantly higher. So we'll table Mac Jones. Let's get into Tua.
I do. So Tua has one of the strangest careers of all time, right? Like, he's got a national championship, he's got a conference championship, like, but in terms of, and he changed the way Alabama quarterback was played, right? Like, every quarterback before him was just a game manager, like, win with dominant running game, dominant defense. It's just interesting, like, how he has all these different achievements, like milestones in his career, but he didn't really achieve them like in a traditional way. Like, as a backup, he won a national championship. So do you give him credit for leading Alabama to a national championship? Like,
yes.
Because does Jalen Hurts get credit for leading Alabama to a national championship? That's what I'm saying. Like, Jalen Hurts started 12 games or 13 games that year. He just comes in for the one. And then as a sophomore, Tua is just incredible. Like, best quarterback you've ever seen in the SEC type stuff. But then at the end of the year to just get, like, just completely exposed against Georgia, exposed against Clemson, it was just a really bad. And then for like Jalen Hurts to come in and kind of save the day and win the SEC and get him into the playoff, it was just like, it's such a strange career. And then you have his junior year where it's cut short due to injuries and they lose a couple games. It's like, for how many good quarterbacks, for how few great quarterbacks, I should say, Alabama's had, like so many of the guys Saban had kind of better careers. But at the end of the day, Tua was just like completing 70% of his passes as in his 2 years as the starter. Like he was just doing things that we've never seen in the SEC. And so I thought about putting him a little higher, but just I kind of had to settle him in at 19.
That's fair. That's fair. Number 18 on your list.
So number 18, I go Jameis Winston. Oh, wait, so who is your 19?
Oh, Mac Jones.
Oh, so we'll get into him. Okay.
Yes.
So number 18, I got Jameis Winston.
My Mac Jones.
That's fair.
Number so 18, you have Jameis. This is a huge discrepancy on both of our lists.
See, in my opinion, Jameis Winston is just... like, Johnny Manziel opened up the floodgates for a freshman to win the Heisman. That doesn't just mean any freshman should be winning the Heisman. I just didn't think that Jameis Winston was a Heisman-caliber player as a freshman. Like, he was really good, but that Florida State team just murdered, like, everybody they played. Like, I feel like, you know, Hudson Mason could have been running quarterback on that team, and they could have gotten to the national championship at least. I don't know. That could be an exaggeration, but... you know, this isn't Clemson's ACC. You know, the ACC was super mediocre at that time. You remember that year, Florida State was beating people like 70 to 10 and stuff. Like, I didn't think he really warranted like the Heisman. And then his sophomore year to go 25 touchdowns to 18 picks, like, he kind of took a huge step back, and they still went undefeated, right? And lost in the first round of the playoff. But Jameis Winston was tough because I'm looking at these Heisman quarterbacks like Matt Leinart and Jason White, and I'm like, he's better than those guys. But in terms of like Heisman winning quarterbacks of the last 20 years, I think Jameis Winston is near the bottom of that list for me. But I guess Troy Smith also missed the list. So there's a few Heisman winners that did miss my list.
I just look at him as like that season, the 2013 season, like it was one of the more dominant teams in college football in our lifetime, right?
It was definitely one of the most dominant teams for sure.
And I think just watching what he was doing, like his debut, he was like 25 of 27, 4 TDs, blowing out Pitt. But in that game, I don't know, there was just something about Florida State that they were just, the Benjamin stuff we'll remember forever, but like Jameis was like the all-time John Elway type prospect, right? Like he and Mariota were can't miss 1-2. And I just thought both of them were so good and so dominant and were so different that like part of me was just Jameis Winston won a lot of football games in college. And that dude won a state championship as a high school junior. Like he just won everywhere. Like that was the thing about Jameis, even though he couldn't see and was squinting. Like he was doing all this while squinting, which people forget. Like, you could barely see. And I think maybe that's part of why I enjoyed the Jameis ride, was that, like, he was so good even when he couldn't see, which, hey, folks, I've heard you need to see down the field as a quarterback. But I just, that dude, I'm still stunned he did not just automatically work out in the NFL, because he was just the most toolsy pocket passer, great arm, wasn't scared. Like he was one of those dudes who kind of opened it up in a different way, where like that guy was throwing downfield, throwing into double coverage before it was cool. And I don't know, we just don't see many quarterbacks like Jameis anymore. And I just think when I think about best college quarterbacks of the last 20 years, like Jameis just pops up in my head, and he's one of the first ones who pop in my head.
Yeah, he was definitely solid. That 2013 team, dude, just looking at their schedule, it's absurd. Like, just 63-0, 54-6, like 62-7. Like, it's absurd. Like, even Clemson that year, they beat 51-14. And man, that team just murdered everyone they played. They second in the country, 51.6 points per game, and allowed 12.1 points per game. Second in the country in points per game, first in the country in points allowed. Just ridiculous. But I felt like it was more the team than Jameis. So that's why I have him at 18 personally.
My 18, Andrew Luck. You have Andrew Luck at 14. Andrew, he didn't win as many games as I thought. Like, for Stanford, it was good. But, like, do you remember anything about Andrew Luck's college career? Like, really anything?
That's a good point. I remember that Oklahoma State Fiesta Bowl. Like, that was, like, a great game when they were, like, number three and number four.
Because I was like, I don't remember really anything about Andrew Luck in college other than that everyone was like, oh, yeah, this is the best college quarterback
but
prospect.
Yeah, you just kind of – I guess it's just kind of Stanford, just the Pac-12, you know, just – you don't watch it as often as you watch the other games. Just not as many marquee teams over there. But I feel like you just knew how good Andrew Luck was every time you saw him play. Like, I feel like he was that John Elway type prospect, I feel like you're saying. Like, I think – Trevor Lawrence and Andrew Luck are by far, I think, the two most hyped up QB prospects of my lifetime. I can remember, like, just everyone just knew, like, these guys are just prototypes.
17 on your
so why list. You have him at 17?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Say it again?
Why not any higher than 17? You just couldn't remember any of his career?
I mean, that was part of it for me, of just like, that dude did not play in one meaningful college football game. Like, that was just part of it. And I understand that, like, this is probably too low for Andrew Luck because he's one of the best college quarterbacks, like, skill-wise, and he played at Stanford, which wasn't his fault, but he did commit there. But, like, I don't know. I think that's just part of it. He never, like, won big. I think they went to, like, the Orange Bowl, maybe.
They beat Virginia Tech in the Orange Bowl his sophomore year.
It was a couple top five finishes. He was just doing his 3 years, doing his time, being awesome, and that was it.
You know what I wonder if, like, another part of it is? Like, those Pac-12 and Big Ten teams, he never played in a Rose Bowl. Mm. I feel like that kind of, like, enhances your career, like, when you ball out in the Rose Bowl. Like, Saquon Barkley, like, oh, what's his name? Sam Darnold. They balled out in the Rose Bowl, so it's like, somehow their, like, legacy is higher.
It's Russell,
you know?
Wilson, man. Like, that.
Yeah, there you go.
Russell Wilson at Wisconsin is the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and so it seems like at Stanford, if you're not going to win a national championship, you need to be in that game, so we have some sort of, like, way of remembering your legacy, because the media loves the Rose Bowl more than any other bowl game by far. And I always hated on it until Georgia played in the Rose Bowl. I was just like, it's so overrated. And then they play it and you're like, I like how much the Rose Bowl gets hyped up.
Number 17 on your list.
Number 17, I got Sam Bradford. Mm. This was a really tough one to rank for me because he was so good in his Heisman year at Oklahoma. But, I mean, just in general, his freshman and his sophomore year, he was great both seasons. But the fact that he got hurt his junior year and then Landry Jones comes in, he's like the NCAA's, like, all-time passing leader, right? Like, yards, I think he's like top five, top three. So I feel like that kind of hurt Sam Bradford's legacy a little bit, that, you know, you can kind of plug anyone into Oklahoma's system and they can put up numbers. So Sam Bradford was super impressive for what he did in his career, but I couldn't put him much higher despite, like, 50 touchdowns he threw his sophomore year.
He seems almost underrated now. Like, that Oklahoma team, they were so efficient, but they had playmakers everywhere. They were so well coached, and that dude was just a winner. But you're also just like, that dude, he's always in the gun. Like, he was one of those where I think a lot of, like, Southern football fans were so angry about Sam Bradford's existence. I remember the SEC fans hated Sam Bradford and, like, were, like, excited to see Tebow and Florida stomp them. It was just like, there was this weird hate for Sam Bradford, and they were like, he wouldn't do this in the SEC, he wouldn't put up these numbers, he wouldn't be able to be in the gun. And then it's like, a couple years later, every SEC quarterback is under the gun all the time, everyone, like, no one's
but I think anymore. it was worth noting that, like, they were scoring 50 points a game in the Big 12, and then they play Florida and they scored what, 14 in the national championship?
Yeah.
It's like, there was something to that SEC defense. I think there was a period that the SEC defenses were just on another level than everyone else. And I feel like they still have the individuals, but it seems like the SEC offenses have kind of caught up and there's no longer like, oh yeah, but who are you? What defense are you playing up against? Like, it seems like that conversation has kind of gone away a little bit in college football.
For sure. My number 17, Tua Tagovailoa, as we talked about, seems low for him, but I had to include him. I almost didn't, but just the 1A, 1B with him with Joe Burrow a couple years ago, that was really fun. The Joe Burrow versus Tua game, I'll remember forever. Like, him making those 4th and 25 plays, like, he balled out in that LSU game, and he showcased everything. And just as a lefty, I like that. And he was, like, the first Alabama highly touted quarterback in forever, right? Like, he was just the one where it's like, oh, Alabama finally got a 5-star quarterback. They've gotten 5-stars everywhere, but they just don't invest in the
quarterback. Well, it seems like they've gotten 5-star quarterbacks, but he was the first one that actually was a true difference maker. Because who is that guy? The Blake Barnett, I know, hopped around. I think AJ McCarron, I don't think, was a 5-star, but they got reasonably highly ranked. They were always getting highly ranked players, you know?
Well, never.
But yeah, Tua was definitely
quarterback in the class. It was never like that.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Number 16 on your list.
Number 16 on my list. This was one of the more difficult guys for me to rank. It was Justin Fields.
Did not make my list.
And it was, at first, he wasn't in my list. And then I'm going through and I'm like, backyard football. Like, am I picking Kellen Moore over Justin Fields? Am I taking Tua over Justin Fields? Like, I'm not taking Sam Bradford over Justin Fields. So I
would be more tempted to put Troy Smith over Justin Fields.
Yeah, but Justin Fields, think about how dominant his year was last year. Like, 41 touchdowns and 3 picks. And we know about the dude's ability to run. Like, I think this year kind of hurt him, and it was just 6-game schedule. Like, they didn't play. He wasn't, like, perfect. So you kind of took something away from him. You're like, oh, well, he wasn't perfect. Last year he was perfect. What happened, you know? But then I think once you got in the playoff and he did what he did against Clemson, I feel like that kind of just solidified, like, the legacy of just how good he really is. Like, just with all the draft stuff going on, like, it seems like people are, like, trying to poke holes in, like, Justin Fields' draft, like, his skills. And he's a lot closer to Trevor Lawrence than I feel like we're all giving him credit for. Like, I still think Trevor Lawrence is better. But, like, Justin Fields is an insane talent, and he's had the production too. I think if they lose in the first round if he plays exactly how he played against Clemson last year in the playoff this year, he probably doesn't make this list. But you don't want it, like, one game just determine someone's legacy. But I think getting Ohio State to the national championship and, you know, just kind of in the fashion that he did it, completing 70% of his passes this year, it was hard for me to rank some guys ahead of him. And that's why he ended up at 16.
Interesting. Well, that's interesting. I did not have him there. I had Colt McCoy at 16 for me. Colt McCoy
Okay. I have Colt McCoy at 12.
Okay. So we're probably in the same ballpark here of why we like Colt McCoy, where it's like, he's not an honorable mention, but he's also not a top 10 guy, but we've now taken for granted the Texas quarterbacks who actually were good and panned out and won a lot of football games at the University of Texas. And Colt McCoy guided him to a national title. Like, I will remember Colt McCoy for the back injury.
In the title game?
Yeah, it was so brutal. Remember him having to walk, like, his family went to the locker room with him?
Man, that was one of the biggest bummers ever, honestly. I feel like that kind of had that matchup, Alabama and Texas, was just, there's so much hype. It was such a sexy matchup.
Yeah.
And for Colt McCoy to get hurt as early as he did, like, I don't even know. It seemed like it was, like, the first series of the game. Yeah, it was. That was a really disappointing. But yeah, Colt McCoy, he's kind of a guy who his career definitely kind of helped him on this list, you know, because he did it for 4 years, 4-year starter. And I think he didn't really give, I don't think he's necessarily given as much credit for his athleticism as well. So I thought Colt McCoy, he's a damn good college player for sure.
He had a season where he had a 77 completion rate.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Like, that's just, That's just almost impossible. Like, Colt McCoy is almost the top 10 quarterback. Like, Colt McCoy
was. And he was so good from day one, too. Like, as a freshman, like, he was kind of like just a better version of Aaron Murray, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Kind of, they kind of came in as freshmen and were just like already, they're already kind of finished products as freshmen and kind of got a little bit better as their career went on. But he just had more NFL kind of ability than Murray and much better athleticism too.
15 for you, sir.
15, I had RG3.
Whew. Little off. I kept sliding him around. I did not know where to put RG3.
I didn't either. I had him like 25 when I first started doing it, and then I just kind of keep just throwing him in there just because his Heisman year, like that's one of the better Heisman seasons like you can find just statistically. Like I think they went like 9-3 or something that year, but just to be that accurate of a passer in like a track star's body, like I feel like I had to just keep putting it further up the list.
Yeah, I mean, his numbers were just bonkers. Like,
so where do you have RG3?
So mine, I had him at 10.
Okay.
I think he's a top 10 college quarterback of the last 20 years. That's the reason I put him up. I just had to slide him in somewhere at 10. And then I couldn't put him in front of the people I had him in front of. But I just, he's on the cover of NCAA football. Big thing there. Even though I don't
think. That was the one with Barry Sanders on the cover too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I don't think either of us put in Denard Robinson on this list.
I did not. I thought about Pat White. I didn't even think about Denard Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Also, hold on. Before you get into this, do you remember that NCAA football game with RG3 and Barry Sanders? The whole like marketing thing of like putting a different player, like putting a player on a different school. Do you remember that?
No.
It was the worst idea I've ever heard. It was like the commercials would be like Harry Dog was like playing NCAA or something, and like someone walks in on him and he's playing with like Tebow is on Georgia or something, and he's like embarrassed, you know, like, oh, it's not what it looks like kind of thing, you know. But and they just show like different like superstars playing on like the rival, and it's like, do you not know college fans at all? Like, we literally hate those people. Like, Alabama fans don't want to play with Cam Newton. They're like, fuck Cam Newton, we don't need him. Like, it was, I just thought it was like the worst market. Like, it couldn't have been more like just out of touch with your base there.
Yeah. But anyway, RG3 was just, that season was incredible. Baylor at that time was not the Baylor we know now, and he was just the perfect guy for Art Briles' scheme, and he was just like a cheat code. Like, he really was just, he could break away with his speed. He was must-see television. Like, I remember having to tune into Baylor games to see what RG3 was going to do.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Number nine, or I guess, excuse me, that he would be, if we were doing my list, it'd be number nine now. It number 14 for you is Andrew Luck. We talked about him. Number 14 on my list. We are going to disagree a lot here.
Oh, Johnny Manziel. Johnny Football, man. At 14? I got him at 3.
He was great as a freshman. We know that. Like, his stuff, he was like, the reason I put him next to RG3 is not a coincidence. They reminded me a lot of each other. Texas products, smaller Texas programs. They weren't the University of Texas. They didn't win big. They never won big in college, but they're really good. And they were tantalizing, and you had to watch them. They were some of the most fun quarterbacks to watch in the last 20 years. They belong in this list, but like, He wasn't ahead of the guys I had him ahead of. Like, I'm not taking Johnny Manziel over Sam Bradford. I'm not in a game. I'm not taking him over Kellen Moore in his career. I'm not taking him over Lamar Jackson. I'm not taking him over RG3. I'm not taking him over.
Johnny Manziel was so much better than all of those guys. I feel like people got so mad about all the off-the-field shit he was doing. They just, like, tried to not give him the Heisman as a sophomore. So his sophomore year was Jameis Winston's Heisman year. And his sophomore year, he was better than he was as a freshman. Like, his rushing numbers weren't there, but that's because he ran for 1,400 yards and 20 touchdowns as a freshman. As a quarterback, rushed for 1,400 yards and 20 touchdowns while not being Nick Fitzgerald. Like, this man was actually a quarterback. So, and then as a sophomore, to throw for more yards, more touchdowns.
Nick Fitzgerald, like, that was unnecessary.
I'm saying Nick Fitzgerald, that was the only other 1,400-yard quarterback I could think of.
He completed a forward pass at Mississippi.
Exactly. So that's the kind of guy that runs, the kind of quarterback that runs for 1,400 yards, not one that's actually just picking the defense apart with his arm. I think Johnny Manziel, oh, man, I like... Like, so my girl wasn't, like, a college football fan back then, and so, like, I have to explain to her, like, because she just knows, like, of Johnny Manziel, like, man, this guy is just, like, a burnout and stuff, and I'm just like, you don't understand, this guy used to be so tight, like, he was as cool as it got, like, Johnny Manziel in college, Johnny football, just the whole persona that went with him, I had him way higher than you. But, I noticed, you skipped... You're number 15 on there. You had Case Keenum at 15. Did I lose you? But yeah, I'm just going to keep talking about Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel, so he threw 26 touchdowns and 9 picks as a freshman. Completed 68% of his passes, 3,700 yards. Then the next year as a sophomore, he improved on everything. So I don't know how you can have him. I don't know how you can have him. You can have him that low. But no, what I was saying, I think I lost you. You skipped your number 15.
My number 15, Case Keenum.
How can you have Case Keenum up there ahead of Colt McCoy?
How can I have the all-time passing leader, the guy before passing was cool, before throwing?
Before passing was cool.
He was Mr. Before Passing.
What was he there for, 7 years?
7 years.
He got like multiple senior years. He got like a fifth year senior, like a 6 year senior thing for him.
He had 19,000 passing yards in college. 19,000 at a 70 completion percentage, 155 touchdowns. And you talk about rushing, guess what? 23 rushing touchdowns. That dude was so much better than Johnny Manziel. He actually could throw forward passes a bunch. Like, Johnny Manziel was fun. But he topped 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns in three different seasons. Three different seasons.
That's,
he passed for more than 2,000 more yards than anyone else in history managed.
I'll give you that. I didn't realize he had 23 career rushing touchdowns. But I guess if you're there for nine years, you can do that. You know, Case Keenum was signed 48-5 as a senior, as a sixth-year senior or whatever. That's legit, for sure. But I don't know. Case Keenum missed my list. I can't put Case Keenum ahead of Justin Fields. I can't do it.
It's insanity. Insanity. Where are we on our list? We are on number...
Okay, so I'm at number 14. So I went Andrew Luck at 14. You had Johnny Manziel. At 13, I got Mac Jones. So you had him at 19.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me Mac Jones at 19 instead of 13.
I don't like that I had Mac Jones as low as I did. But I also only have 1 year with him. And then I'm like, well, then how do I have Joe Burrow as high as I do? And I'm like, is it just because he's not cool? Like, part of it is just like, Mac Jones is just not cool. And then the Zips, and I don't know if part of it's the Sims love for Mac Jones. And now seeing he might get top 15, I'm like, are we all just wrong about Mac Jones and that he was actually awesome? And he was finessing some passes in the Tennessee game that were just insane. Like, his location is bonkers. And he had a perfect season at Bama, and he did it in a COVID year and an all SEC schedule. I don't have a great case for it. I didn't know where to put Mac Jones. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know where to put him.
He was a tough one to rank for sure, because there's so many of these quarterbacks that are just like surrounded by elite talent. Like, I kind of, you know, maybe throw him with like Matt Leinart and Sam Bradford or something. But I don't know. Something just seemed like more elite about Mac Jones. Like, even though obviously the receivers were running open, they were beating their man a lot, but it just seemed like every single throw this man made was just right where it needed to be. 41 touchdowns to 4 picks, 77% passing, like just an absurd season. And like you said, an all SEC schedule. It was very difficult to, you know, kind of where you rank him among these, but I think the guys that have the 1 year wonders, like if that's their only year starting, it's easy to justify putting him up there, especially like he finished like when he came in for Tua getting hurt as a sophomore, like he had a strong finish that year too.
Fair. My 13, Sam Bradford. Your number 12, Colt McCoy.
My number 12 is, yeah, Colt McCoy.
My number 12, Kellen Moore. Talked about both of them. Your 11. We actually are the exact same here.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson. He just missed the top 10.
I flirted with putting him in the top 10. And then I was like, I just think RG3 was better. And I think RG3 was... I think the program at Baylor was more difficult to do what he did than what Lamar did at Louisville. But what Lamar did at Louisville is still pretty remarkable. And he was just in the same vein, must-see television. And they were pretty similar players, actually, with the way they played. But why did you have Lamar at 11?
Well, comparing him to like Johnny Manziel, I feel like Johnny Manziel was just a much better passer, much more accurate passer. And that's kind of what made the difference. But like this guy running for 1,500 yards, 20 touchdowns, 1,600 yards, like he really was must-see TV. Like Lamar Jackson, we all had our questions about how legit it was and how it was going to work in the NFL. And he's... You know, obviously there's questions about how good he can be in the NFL, but he's clearly proven what he does is good enough to work at the next level too. So just missed the top 10. I think it was the percentage, the 57%, 56% and 59% in his 2 years in his second and third year as the starter. So I think that kind of hurt him once you're comparing him to just all the great quarterbacks of the last two decades. But I mean, you can't ignore 4,000 career rushing yards and 50 career rushing touchdowns. That's stupid.
Yeah. Are you more of a Woody Dantzler guy or a Lamar Jackson guy?
Woody Dantzler. That's a throwback right there. I'm definitely putting Lamar Jackson ahead of Woody Dantzler. But if without Woody Dantzler, there would be no Lamar Jackson. He was one of the first of his kind.
Absolutely.
I think when he graduated, he was Clemson's all-time rusher, all-time passer. I could be wrong about that.
I think
Brad Smith. I know Brad Smith was Missouri's all-time passer and all-time rusher when he when he graduated. That's a pretty impressive feat. I would assume Lamar Jackson's got to be Louisville's all-time rusher, right? I'll get back to you on
Michael
that.
Michael Bush actually might be that. Michael Bush comes to mind, but
Jackson is first all time. Okay. Michael Bush is sixth all time, okay. And a bunch of other guys that I have never heard of.
last one, because we're gonna break this up into two parts.
Bilal Powell went to Louisville. I did not know that.
I didn't actually either.
Fun fact for you. I'd be way better knowing everyone's college when I was playing Madden back in the day, but Madden game slipping. But we'll keep it moving.
Number 10 on my list was RG3. Number 10 on your list, which is where we'll wrap up today, Kyler Murray. He did not even make my top 20.
Oh, man, we're ending at 10? We should end it at 11. We should save the top 10 for next week.
Oh, okay. We'll save Kyler. We'll leave it at Kyler.
We'll leave it at Kyler Murray.
All right. Put a pin in it. Yeah, this is good. I as we started, I was like, this is going to be a three-hour show if we do the full thing. Like, there's
nothing to
do
without that's that. Fair.
So we'll do part two for the top 10 next week, folks. So go check that out. Don't forget, you can follow Matt Green, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, by following at Matt_W_Green, following myself at Chase_Thomas on Twitter.com. Leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple. If you have not already done so, it helps. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com today for all access to all my articles and all the podcasts and all that great stuff. That is all the plugging that I am going to do here. For that guy down there in Decatur, Georgia, Matt Green, for myself up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, that is all I've got. Thank you, as always, my friend, and we will talk again very soon.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Even on a budget, Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.